Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
So Nancy, yeah, the experience of these conversations was really great in that it actually got me thinking about our business a little bit differently, you know, just being able to share some of these very specific case studies and really, you know, think through and being asked about, you know, some of the specificity of it and what made them unique, you know, being in that more mid-market range actually really changed how we've thought about some of the things that we're going to be doing in the near future here. So yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to not just share that, but also appreciate the perspective that it brought for us internally about how we think about our business.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Larissa Uretti, today's guest mentor, is a multi-venture entrepreneur and CEO of Nowhere Consultants. Larissa moved into a co-ownership and CEO role in 2018. The founder, Aaron Crabb, is the chief technology officer. They are in a long-term relationship and having fun building a digital strategy agency that leverages technology to solve business problems. They are a power team for small businesses who need a digital marketing makeover that complements handshake relationships, which is our focus today. Everyone loves a fabulous makeover. So today you will hear how Larissa became a multi-venture entrepreneur and CEO of Nowhere Consultants. She will define digital marketing and its components, and you will get a recent digital marketing makeover with a business built on handshakes. So to give you a little bit more background about Larissa Uretti, she was born and raised in Denver. She found a passion for helping small business owners grow and thrive in the online world after her own experience running a creative side hustle in early 2007. Since then, she has worked with Grammy hopefuls, large organizations, and inventive startups across multiple channels and platforms. She's the CEO of Nowhere Consultants and loves mountain biking and traveling. Hi, Larissa.
Hello, Nancy. Good morning. How are you?
So in what state in the United States am I finding you?
So we are currently here in Kansas City, Missouri, actually.
And what's the weather like today?
It's trying to definitely fall. Fall has arrived. We've got some great, you know, colors starting to happen on the trees. But currently it's cloudy and looking like it's trying to rain. So hopefully that doesn't happen again.
Yeah. All right. And it's pretty balmy here. We've moved into the 40s and 50s. So a bit chilly, but it's really great coat weather. So let's start with kind of a few basics about digital marketing before delving into your gigantic improv skit that you call your life. I love that description. So how do you define digital marketing?
So honestly, like digital marketing is really, at this point, it's marketing, I think. I think that where we are, you know, currently with so much of business and friendships and family and all those kinds of relationships being, you know, crafted and created and maintained online, that really digital marketing should not be considered separate from marketing. So that said, I really do think it is the act of being able to communicate clearly and what pain point your business solves and who you solve that for in the online world, whether that's through your website, your social media, whatever that first impression is that people are going to have of your business when they're sitting at home looking for your services or looking for a solution to a problem that they might have.
And what are the components?
So any good digital marketing strategy and arguably a good marketing strategy, you're definitely going to have a website. You're going to have a clear message, which I think is true whether you're in the online space or not. You're going to, you know, probably have some kind of social media presence, right? Whether that's through LinkedIn or, you know, Facebook or Instagram, just depends on, you know, who your audience is and what the goal is, which I think really taps into that larger part of overall strategy. Yeah. And then, yeah, it really is, you're going to have a clear sense of who and what you're trying to offer for this world.
And what are the three components that you talk about that need to be in like a digital marketing strategy?
Yeah, really, it's going to take a holistic approach, right, from the experience, you know, that customers have. And so to do that, you really want to look at like how users are finding and learning about you and your solutions online, what experience and first impressions you make in that digital space, and then what process you have for keeping them engaged and connected to your company once maybe they've wandered off or they've completed some action, right?
Yeah. Oh, that sounds great. And how does email marketing play a key role in staying connected with current and future clients? Like, how can it strengthen handshake relationships?
Absolutely. So email marketing is a critical component of communicating with your current clients. And it's a really easy way to step into your first ventures with online communication. So when you're thinking about those handshake relationship businesses, email marketing can be a great way to bring value to maybe new customers that you just met. It can also be the silent, quiet reminder that they need that keeps you top of mind when they're looking for new services, or maybe you're just in the background reminding them that you exist. It can be a really nice way also to augment and complement an in-person event. So maybe you've got an in-person training that you've just run. You had a big luncheon. That email that you send afterwards can be like the final touch to put the bow on that total experience.
And what is your philosophy about digital marketing?
So digital marketing is not separate from your business. Marketing is business. There's really no way around it. And without a plan in place to reach and address your customers and potential clients, you don't have a business. And so whether that is online, in person, whatever, like marketing is not separate.
So viewing it as an instrumental or integral part of how you're running your business and making sure that you also get the sales training that you need to take a look at how you're building your relationships both on and offline. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think the sales piece is really important and something that you know, is also often overlooked or emphasized somehow before marketing.
Yeah, I suggest
really
everybody
do go hand in hand, right?
Yeah. And everybody needs to go through sales training to really understand the key ways in which people make marketing decisions and purchases and their psychology and just how to augment every aspect of what you're doing and how you're trying to solve problems for people.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
So how do you work with small businesses and what kind of businesses do you work with?
We specialize in working with mid-market blue-collar businesses as well as a variety of startups, so across the spectrum. We also have a special place in our ecosystem for nonprofits and community-focused businesses. Back in June of this year, actually, 2021, brought Nowhere up to the point of being able to get their B Corporation status, which is really important to me. And essentially, that is a legally binding designation that says that good business is good business, so that when you do right by others or the community, the environment or whatever, that in turn begets more good business. And so we've really, you know, shifted our focus recently to start having those conversations. But we do really focus on that, like I said, that kind of mid-market entrepreneurship landscape, right? The different ways that we work with them. We really can come in what I call the tip to tail solution. So whether that's a fractional CMO where you just need someone to help guide the strategy and then maybe empower and excite your team to be able to execute on some of those tasks and goals that are being outlined, or whether you need someone to really do the work with you, right, and alongside you. So that can look like coming in and saying, okay, hey, you want to get started in the online space, you don't really know how. Let's sit down and have a conversation around what an email marketing plan could look like. Or let's take a hard look at your website and make sure that it's actually serving you and not just something that you pay for every year and don't really ever use.
So what's your strategy, right, for helping small businesses go from a handshake business to the digital era without compromising the cherished business relationships, which you and I talked about off air? That is a really big concern for those who have done handshake businesses all their entrepreneurial lives.
Yeah, totally. I think the best approach is to start slow. There's an assumption that we hear a lot, but no one cares about what I eat for lunch. And if no one's asking you to start, you know, getting on Instagram and hashtagging your lunch, right? That is not the same thing as having a digital marketing plan. And you can be thoughtful and intentional about the types of content and information that you're going to share. The value in letting folks know what you're up to, what initiatives are coming down the pipeline, or like I said, being able to find a subtle and non-invasive way, I think is really important, of following up with an in-person event or finding a good way to remind folks that you exist. Uh-huh. I think something like the average consumer needs something like 13 touches before they commit to making a decision. And that's only going to continue to grow as the online and physical world become more cluttered with more people who have great things that they want to sell you.
Yeah, and it's a differentiator. Well, and I'm concerned about those who have handshake businesses. How can they stay competitive if they're not really learning about the digital marketing arena? Like, they have to really study it and understand the different aspects of it, but how to make it so it isn't so cumbersome for them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that we talk to, you know, our clients a lot about, that exact thing, about saying we worked with a large company pretty recently and we helped them bring online training, or a training program that's typically done in person online, right, during the pandemic. No one else in their market is doing that. And it was a huge talking point for them, both internally and externally. And it was really something that they could say, instead of hand-wringing and wondering how we're going to do this, let's get creative, let's get inventive, and let's go ahead and break the mold a little bit and do something that's unexpected. And the feedback that they've gotten, and they've had over 1,000 people come through that training program at this point, and it's just coming up on being about a year old. And
how long were you working with them?
So they've been a client of ours for, that was actually the first project that we did. So they've been a client of ours for about a year and a half at this point. And we're actually just getting ready to head into what we all are jokingly calling phase 1.75, where we're going to be adding some really nice features, because there was definitely a sense of urgency around getting that up and running during the pandemic and really striking while that iron was hot and taking the opportunity. It had been something that they've been talking about forever, when we'd had lots and lots of conversations, probably 8 months worth of just conversations, getting to know each other, making sure we were going to be a good fit for everyone. And then the opportunity came, and we all sat down at a conference table and said, look, if we don't do this now, we're going to miss this really, we're going to miss the window, right? This is nascent, this is important, and this is a great place for you guys to really start to bring that. And we did it, right? And it's been amazing. Looking forward to what's coming next.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Let's fill in some more of your life as a multi-venture entrepreneur and digital marketing expert. Yeah. Are you ready for this?
I think so. Do my best.
All right. Yeah, some of our lives they're complex.
Always.
Well, you don't bring out the term of a gigantic improv skit as a descriptor of your life without some things happening.
Absolutely.
What was it like growing up in your household?
I think it was pretty typical in a lot of ways. I was an only child of mostly, I do have an older half brother, but yeah, I grew up in suburban Littleton, Colorado. It was beautiful, great access to schools and that kind of stuff. I really did spend a lot of time. I sort of joke that I grew up outside because I was absolutely that kid who got a bike and then got the freedom to like go do whatever I wanted. Yeah.
And you grew up in what era? What, in the 80s, 90s?
So I am a child of the 90s. I'm probably a really old millennial, depending on how you do the math. Okay. I was born actually in a snowstorm in Colorado, back when snowstorms were really epic, on New Year's Eve in 1982.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I sort of came into consciousness around the 90s, I think.
Yeah, and you were born to make a difference. So what life work did your parents pursue?
So my mom was a stay-at-home mom, largely, and just decided that that's what she was going to do. Is a civil engineer who had built his own company from the ground up, and I definitely grew up in his office, helping learn how to file, and I'm sure annoying everyone, because when you're 5 or 6 years old running around your dad's office, like, maybe you don't have the most reverence for the work that needs to get done, but learning how to, yeah, really seeing the inner workings of that business. His specialty has always been in wastewater treatment plants, which I thought was really interesting. And so as a kid, I would grow up on these job sites. I mean, I learned how to drive on a construction job site, essentially, right, in my dad's Jeep at 14.
Nice.
So, yeah. I grew up in a blue-collar environment.
Yeah, it makes sense for the population also that you serve, right? You have an insight into
that. The fact that I know what that world is, especially from the business owner's perspective, from the fact that, that I've spent time on a job site, a lot of time, I know what that looks and feels like is absolutely that I lean on that experience a lot to break the barrier between me and engineers, because I think a lot of them feel like marketing isn't for them because they're not, you can't possibly know how my business works. And it's like, no, I'm really aware.
Yeah, right.
Like, I've done all the grunt work, like short of driving the equipment because I couldn't reach the pedals. Like I have done it. So.
Yeah. So what kind of words would you use to describe your mom and dad?
So my dad is definitely, he's very driven. He's rugged. He's very competitive. He's charming. He has a temper, which I think comes with being passionate about, you know, things. He's definitely an implementer, right? He's the guy that says, okay, this is the vision and here's what we need to go to get done to go do that. And my mom is definitely not quite like that. She's more straight-laced. She's very dedicated. She's done. She really did. I know it was a hard decision for her to decide to stay home and raise me. And I understand that. My mom's pretty particular. It's funny because I am not particularly particular. And that is an area that we like to butt heads sometimes about, you know, how something should or should not be done.
Yeah. Yeah. What were some of her interests or are?
So my mom is, she's always loved to travel. She's always, I remember, it's so funny, like looking back on it now, because as a kid, it was like pulling teeth to get me to do like my geography homework, for example, whereas she loves that stuff. And so she would like, we would get into it over trying to do this stuff. And now I love traveling and I've actually adopted like her attitude about go learn the history of where you're going to go because it richens the whole experience. And I don't always do that, but it's just funny to see how that rubbed off despite all the struggles we had. But yeah, so she's always loved to travel. She loves my mom is very feminine, right? Like she loves like British tea culture and flowers and gardening. And I'm definitely more of a tomboy, but yeah, just even in my own life now, like we have a garden and I have a really strong appreciation for flowers and that kind of stuff and love having those things. And I think it's a lot of her influence that has led me to that, to be able to figure out how to balance the two sides, because I am absolutely a combination between my parents.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So she rubbed off on me in her own way for sure.
That's right. Reluctantly.
Yeah, reluctantly. And it's funny because my mom was, when I knew her, right, growing up, I never would have really called her a risk taker. When she grew up in a small town in Nebraska. And when she was 19, she dropped out of college and got in a car with some girlfriends and they drove to Denver with no plan from a tiny town in Nebraska. That was unheard of when she was growing up. And yeah, and she got a job being the executive assistant for, I believe it was Lockheed, which then became Lockheed Martin, obviously. And so really she also in her way had her finger on the pulse of what was about to become, you know, really big business. And that takes a boldness that I don't think is really talked about much in that era.
Yeah, well, it's good you're calling it that, you know, now and really recognizing that about your mom.
Absolutely. It took some time. But looking back, I'm like, that was pretty radical. That was pretty cool, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It gives you a little bit more appreciation for some of the spunk that you've got.
Absolutely. And we've talked about that. I told her, I was like, you can't be too surprised, Mom.
Yeah. So what else did you enjoy about growing up in your home?
Yeah, Colorado was beautiful. I had a lot of freedom as a teenager and had the trust of my parents, which I appreciate. Downtown Denver at the time now is obviously a very cool place, but it was pretty kind of punk rocky, edgy. And we definitely found those corners to go hang out in. I spent a lot of time hanging out in downtown. Loved being able to get out and explore the mountains on the weekends with some friends. I had friends who were really into skiing and camping and all that kind of stuff. And I was lucky enough that they would take me along with them. And so whether that was taking the family trip to go see the Aspens turn, because that was a big thing that, you know, my mom really likes, or going out and doing something a little bit more, like I said, rugged or roughing it with some friends of mine.
Yeah, it sounds like you developed a really strong appreciation for place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And if you're going to grow up in a state, Colorado, you can't really beat it. It's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah. How did you overcome challenges in your family of origin?
I really did look for inspiration in other places. So when I was growing up, and it's funny to say this now, like when I was growing up in Denver, like there was not much going on that was accessible to someone who wasn't over 18, let's put it that way, but like just everywhere was off limits or underdeveloped. And the public transportation wasn't what it was today, although we did get that towards the end of my, you know, I'd say like early 20s, you know, like mid, early 20s, stuff did start to change, but I was already in Kansas City at that point. I was always a restless kid, and the opposite of most kids, we never moved. So like the house that they bought in, you know, 82 is the house that my mom still lives in. And I really wanted to change that up. So as soon as I was old enough, I left home and came out to Kansas City.
What drew you to Kansas City?
So actually, my mom's cousin was an artist. And I remember coming across some of his work. And I know that she was always really impressed by his talent. And I had always had an interest in the arts. And he actually went to the Kansas City Art Institute. And I remember I looked him online and was looking at all the stuff. And I was like, man, this place looks really cool. Like, I would love to go have that experience. It was really the only college I applied to. I was so confident that I was going to get in that it never occurred to me that I should maybe apply to others. And it worked out.
That's good. Yeah.
You know, and then I did get out of town. So after college, I spent a year backpacking around Europe when I was 23 or 24. And I really cite that experience, both the leaving home pretty immediately and then taking that sort of next step adventure and doing the thing that, you know, I really had wanted to do, the way that I learned how to kind of stand on my own 2 feet and have some leadership in my own life.
Yeah. And speaking of leadership, when did you begin asserting self-leadership by really taking charge of your life? So it sounds like that same around at 22.
Yeah. 22, 24, I realized that if I didn't do something about my life, no one else would either, which I think is a realization that have to get to at some point, that you can look back and say that you wish things were different, or you can look forward and think about all the things that you're not doing. But at the end of the day, like, at some point, it's your choice, like what you're going to wake up the next day and do. And that all really did come to head for me right around that 22 to 24. I realized that like, that the things I was doing were not tied to what really fired me up and what really, you know, made me feel like I was myself, and the people I idolized were not living the life that I was living. And I left a long-term relationship and sold all of my stuff, put everything into storage, packed a backpack, and bought a one-way ticket to Turkey, actually.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yes. My dad is Turkish, so that helps. I've got some family over there, but I decided I was going to go live with them for 3 months and see what happened. And that turned into a year of traveling around Europe on my own solo before cell phones really were a thing that you could just like have with you at all times. So think about that. It's weird.
Yeah.
Even though that wasn't that long ago. So it was great.
Yeah. It sounds like you're a financial risk taker as well as an emotional risk taker.
Yes, to some extent. I definitely planned that trip out. I spent a lot of time. I knew I had wanted to do it. And so I always had the savings account and the stars aligned. I basically took a look at my life and said, okay, I've got plenty of money in savings, right? I was really lucky to have a good job and people around were fine with that. You know, and I remember I called my dad and I said, dude, I'm doing this. Can you take me to the airport in St. Louis? Which is not close, by the way. It's 4 hours away, but I, you know, found a cheap ticket. And he was like, yeah, what's going on? And I was like, I'm going to go. And he was like, if you got to go, you got to go.
Oh, wow.
Very really empowering. Appreciate with my dad. That's absolutely like, that sums up our relationship. Like we understand each other. Whereas my mom was like, wait, you're going to do what? And I was like, it's going to be fine. Don't worry about it.
Like, I'll figure out details as I go.
Basically, I'll figure out the details once I get there. And I did. I was very lucky that I was able to land with family and, you know, spent 3 months with them and got myself sorted out and figured out what I wanted to do. And then I just spent the rest of that year pursuing both opportunities as they arose, right? So, you know, things in the moment, but I had also planned out some more structured stuff in the form of artist residencies and some creative places where I could go and knew that I would have people and people and places to interact with.
Oh, that sounds really awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. What pivotal points or experiences prompted you to pursue marketing?
I love helping people and I love challenging people and ideas. And I want to see more of the good ideas in this world come into the light because the people who run them feel like they have tools and access and the knowledge to do so. And I think like through running my own creative venture early on, or at least trying to, right? And I remember when I first started, I went to a friend of mine who was in web development and I said, I need a website. She said, great, what do you want it to look like? And I was like, I have no idea. I don't have any way to think about this. Yeah. And realizing through that experience, being like, oh, there's a lot of power in this. This is cool. And then early on in my career, getting really interested in the more sort of analytical side of things. So like SEO, which is search engine optimization, is a perfect blend between creative thinking, creative problem solving, and then a really strong technical understanding of what you're trying to do and how it works. And I find that space to be really interesting, right? Like, how do you tell a very human story? And how do you do these very you know, human things and get into the mindset of a buyer, right, online and figure out what their intention is, and then also turn around and be able to manage the really technical side of what that actually takes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Who were your mentors that started showing up in your life?
Interestingly enough, if I go back to childhood, we did have a neighbor that really stepped in into some of those more leadership roles, I think, in a way that maybe my own parents couldn't or didn't, which I think is interesting. But then mentorship has been an area that I am still actively very interested in finding. Very recent, so within the last 2 years, a client of ours introduced me to his neighbor, who is, she's the strategic director of marketing for a massive organization, global, huge. And it was really cool because they're neighbors. They drink wine on each other's porches and they talk about business. And while that was happening, and he's actually been a mentor to me as well, just because we're comparable in age. He's in the blue collar space. He's super smart. And we end up talking through goals and problems and that kind of stuff. But he made the introduction to her. He introduced her to me, or me to her, however you want to look at that. And he really did it because he said, I want you to meet her. There's really no point, but I think that you'll get a lot from it. And she's super cool. And so that was really meaningful and not something that he had to do, which I think was really cool. And then I have over the years joined some, you know, networking organizations. So I'm part of a BNI group, which is Business Network International. And through there, have gotten to connect with, he's the VP of a very large, I would say mid-size. I guess that in his space, the giants in his market are much, much bigger, but he runs a health insurance brokerage firm. And being able to talk to him and have some of those conversations with him that I can't have with a startup because they just aren't there. They've never managed. You know, he has divisions that are the size of our entire company. Yeah. So being able to go to him and say, hey, I'm really worried about hiring, or how do I do this? And having his perspective is really valuable because it shows you how they think of things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So how did your personal life start taking shape in your 20s and 30s?
That's a good question. So when I got back from that European adventure, getting my life in order, reset trip, whatever you want to call it, I spent some time working a super odd job I was a mad scientist for after school programs, oddly enough. So we would go into schools and you would run these really cool hands-on classes. And I was just doing it because I just needed a job. It turns out, speaking of mentors, the owner of that company and just the way that system works really did teach me a lot about leadership, because like you're walking in, sometimes I would be walking into an 8-hour day with on the weekend teaching an entire workshop where you're supposed to get kids interested in science and you're supposed to be a mentor and you're working with low-income children or you're working with a wide variety of students and people. And that takes a level of leadership that I had never really believed that I had. I didn't know that I could go in and command the presence of a bunch of 12 to 15-year-olds or 8 to 10-year-olds who's this? Like I'm not part of their life normally. And then through that, I was exposed to a lot more opportunities working with older demographics and all this kind of stuff. And it really did change my life because you had to walk in there and be ready to go, right? If you faltered, you were going to get eaten alive, by this room full of children. And so I really owe it to that.
They will not take me down.
For real. I mean, there was one day where it was only four of us, I remember, and we walked into an auditorium and there were probably 75 kids in there. And these were kids who, with known behavioral problems, that they were really trying to expose to some fun stuff. And it was an amazing afternoon, but really having to tap into that confidence and say, I'm the authority here and we're going to do this from a place of equity, but also you can't run the show.
Yeah.
It was really interesting and very surprising. I did not expect to learn that working in an after school program, but yeah.
So it sounds like your parents were really strong role models, especially your dad was starting his own venture. Did you learn about entrepreneurship and business ownership outside of your own family of origin as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it was shortly after I got back and was from my backpacking tour or whatever. It's probably like 25, 26. I went through the Kauffman Fast Track program, which is great and is sort of a crash course in business. I do have a fine arts background, which I've alluded to. And I will tell you that if you strip away the words, what you learn coming through that college experience is how to take no, how to be persistent, and how to have the grit to actually pursue something that you use, because they definitely don't teach you that you do not walk out of there with an expectation that anyone will care that you want to change the world and that you have to earn that. And then obviously with being in the online space has been huge. And then outside of those academics, I spend a lot of time watching TED Talks, reading books by Brené Brown and other leadership type folks. And then, absolutely. My childhood was part of that, but
Was the Kauffman Fast Track program in person?
It was. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It was.
That's one of the top entrepreneurship programs in the country.
Yes. And it was great. I took it through the Women's Business Entrepreneurship Network or something that I had found and got in, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was unlike anything I'd ever been through. And it's kind of cool because now, just as Kauffman is such a driving force here in Kansas City, that we've really stayed with it and have stayed connected to them. And they championed the 1 million cups movement, which I think you guys have a great one actually out.
Yeah, the
area.
Minnesota Cup. Yeah.
Yep. And yeah, and I'm the lead organizer for that now here, which is really cool for the Kansas City chapter. And yeah, so it's just been nice to see how they continue to play a role in my own journey as well.
Yeah. And you can fulfill your desire to mentor.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. In a space that's contained, because otherwise that can, you know.
Otherwise it can be your whole life.
Wait, totally.
I have a business to run.
You took the Strengths Finder, a way in which to help you understand a little bit more of one of your strengths. What was your top strength?
Top strength came out as communication. Imagine that, right? Love to talk. I think that through that, if you really look at it, marketing is at its core communication. And so how do you break through the noise, and how do you carve that space for you and your audiences? And we always talk about how, like, where your expertise and your audience's interests overlap is where you create the most value. Mm-hmm. And being able to do that in a way that they want and are receptive to, and that provides value, like, that at its core, that is communication. So yeah, I think that's, no one was terribly surprised when that one came out.
<At the top>. Least of all you. Yeah. So describe some of the other ventures that you've been exploring and growing along with your current venture, Nowhere.
Yeah. My partner and I are actually currently working on a startup called Rent Game Night.
So tell us a little bit about your partner, too.
So if you would like to have a box of curated games shipped to your doorstep, we can help you with that.
Okay. I interrupted you on that. Could you just say that again about Rent Game Night?
Yeah. My partner and I are currently building a startup called Rent Game Night, which is the Netflix of board games. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yes, it's a great way to, we discovered ourselves, right? So going back to problem-focused solutions, we were going to a friend's house for a game night, and we have a really dusty version of Scrabble, and that's about it. And we wanted to bring something, but we don't want to go spend $300 at a game store for games that we don't know if they're going to be any fun to play. And so we were like, why can't we rent this? Like, why isn't this a thing? And we did some looking around and decided to start our own, and are kind of just leaning into that experience. Yeah, it's cool. Like I said, up until very recently, I had my own creative side hustle business, which focused on jewelry and accessories that I would hand make. And then just personally, I sit on some entrepreneurship boards and leadership panels, as well as continue to be keeping my toe in the more creative business arts world, I would say. But yeah.
And where did you meet Aaron Crabb? I'm assuming that's the partner you're referring to.
That is the partner. Yes, that is the partner. He and I met at an indie bookstore here in Kansas City called Prospero's. And it was some after hours thing. And yeah, got to know each other, went on a couple of dates, and the rest is history.
And going into becoming a CEO of a company that Aaron founded, how did you come about that? What were the critical experiences
Aaron,
there?
Yeah, Aaron really started it as a software consulting company early on. And then it was just that typical freelancer's journey for a while. He had found a couple of clients, and through that conversation, then had realized that some of those clients that they were serving didn't really have a plan in place to take the software that they were, you know, asking to have built. They hadn't really found the problem or the pain point. They were making assumptions, and they invested a lot of money into those assumptions. And then it was like, okay, we built it. Why is no one using it? And because you got to, you know, wait, hang on. There's a whole other half of this equation.
We forgot about that part.
That was my background at that point. I got started in figuring that out. And through that sort of natural evolution, somewhere around 2015, we went on a big 4-month cycling tour around Europe, and both kind of came home realizing that we didn't maybe want to work for other people any longer, and that it was time to take this thing and really see what we could do with it. And I remember having a conversation with him and saying, hey, like, I think I could grow it. Like, I think I really could grow it. And are you with me? Like, you want to, I don't know, let's roll the dice, right? Like, you want to.
So that was in 2018 when you made it official?
That, that was actually 2015.
Okay.
So this thing has had a couple of evolutions, right? So officially started in 2012. It did that whole freelancer thing for a while. 2015, I said, okay, let me see if I can go sell this and build this under the purview that I'm familiar with, which is much more of that integrated strategy and marketing and that kind of stuff. And even then, early days of 15, it was really just me figuring out what the market wanted and what I thought would be valuable and successful, kind of what pain points were people having. So we went through the fair share of drama that always entails when you're trying to find that product market fit and really find where you can do the most good and actually have a life and like the people you work with and
yeah,
have good clients and all that kind of stuff. And so then 2018, it got to a point where we were looking at it and saying, this could be something if we really actually buckle down. And so instead of this being this like one foot in freelancer and one foot in trying to build a company, teasing the idea of having employees, teasing the idea of formalizing some processes, we sat down at the dining table and said, okay, what would this actually look like?
But
I had really worked myself into being the face of the business over those last 3 years and said, what do you think?
Wow.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk more in our next segment about how you're building out your business, because we're going to be talking about 3 digital makeovers, and
yes,
that'll fit very nicely, yeah, into the conversation. As we finish out today's conversation, I was wondering if you could describe your favorite and most challenging digital marketing makeover this year.
So the most challenging, I know I gave you a lot of answers when we talked about this offline, but
hard to narrow it, isn't it?
I know it is, yeah. Right? It's, oh my gosh, so many. I think probably one of the most challenging, and it's challenging in all of the ways of that word. Challenging in that it's a really wild idea. It's very cool, but no one knows that they need it, but they totally need it. And then just where the owner is also makes it challenging because they're figuring this out as they go along. But it's a company called The Flowery, based out of California, and she is trying to revolutionize how floral delivery and sustainable flower growth happen. And she's trying to take on this industry that, you know, where you can get roses from China in your grocery store in winter because of, you know, yep, seasonal. And she really wants to put an emphasis on seasonal regional flower delivery type entities and make that a possibility. And she wants to unite these florists who are doing a lot to try and stay viable in a world of 1-800 flowers. And she wants to find a way to bring them all together into this marketplace that people really can come top of mind when you go, oh yeah, I want a local floral delivery in Kansas City. Let's see if we can take on some of those bigger players. So I would say that's probably the most challenging. We've had others, obviously, a training program and some of that kind of stuff. But I think as far as the challenge goes,
that,
you know, she really
one
has all those components.
Yeah. And you had also mentioned a concrete company that was also a second runner.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but those are the folks actually. So that large concrete company, they're a $40 million company going back to that blue collar roots. They were the ones with the training program that we needed to spin up a solution for pretty quickly, starting back in 2020. And then as that's progressed into this year and continuing to turn that into something that has a lot of value for them. It's just been a ton of fun. And it's been really cool to watch it take off and also hear some of the struggles that they've had. So they obviously have a much more robust, you don't get to be a company that size without marketing of some sort. And so being able to work with their director of marketing and say, this is how this is going to fit into your current initiatives has been a really fun challenge for us.
Yeah. And you're right. The key element that many small business owners have not implemented in their business is a really strong, robust digital marketing campaign.
Yeah, totally. I can't tell you how many people have the idea and they go straight to, okay, great, let's go run some ads. And you're like, you are missing like 2 out of 3 major steps here. Like, we've got to sit down and have some intention behind this, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Totally.
Yeah.
This otherwise, has been, you're going to spend a lot of time and money doing nothing, right?
Yeah, a lot of people have spent a lot of time and money. And so I would like to flesh out in our next conversation a little bit more about where business owners can get the biggest bang for their digital bucks. Thank you so much. This has been just a delight, Larissa. Thank you for sharing so openly your experiences and your life and giving us some digital marketing makeovers that can complement handshake relationships.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll see you in our next conversation. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Mike Cabea, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. And we'll see y'all next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.